Okay, we're going to resume the this discussion, in fact, and the last talk in the morning before we go for lunch at the same place as yesterday. So I guess that you will find it. There will be no help today, so so you have to activate your place cells. So we're going to have Brigitte Galliot from Geneva University, and she will talk about the wind signaling controls, control in head generation in Hydra. I mean, thank you, Brigitte.
Okay, thank you very much, Alain, for inviting me. And Denis, yeah, of course, but I'm more embarrassed too. Thank you. Actually, I should not be here because you are going to see that embryonic development is extremely limited and Hydra is certainly not a good model system for embryonic development. So I am still going to try to answer the question, which is development and regeneration, same mechanisms and same concepts. Just for those of you who are not extremely familiar, Hydra belongs to cnidarians. Together with jellyfish, sea anemones, corals, and you see that the common ancestor of cnidarians was a sister group. It forms a sister group to all bilaterians, and this is an animal tree where you have the most famous species for regeneration. So the idea is maybe we can learn something from this animal to trace some core mechanisms of regeneration. Hydra is quite amazing because you can find it quite easily in ponds, and they are extremely resistant to environmental changes. Like here, for example, staff for 3 weeks, you see they decrease in size, but they remain extremely fit, and you start to feed them again, and they reproduce asexually through budding. So happy Hydra doesn't go through sex, but goes through asexual reproduction. This is the budding process, which is quite fast because it takes 24 hours to have this bud growing and first tentacle rudiments, and then the animal is going to detach after 3-4 days. So when you have a heavily fed culture, you get plenty of animals every week. And this is, by contrast, sexual reproduction that does happen, but which is usually more a survival process when temperature becomes very cold, so in November typically in Europe, or if feeding resources become quite limited, then animals become sexual. So this is here testes, this is here an oocyte, and you see the embryo developing for the first hours on the parent, and you see this thick chorion here, which is really the reason why we have difficulties to study these embryos, because you cannot break the chorion without breaking the embryo. And so far, I think there are less than 10 papers on embryonic development and no functional studies at all. Yeah. So on the right, it's a male. These are the testes. And this is a female, yeah. Depending on the species, they can be hermaphrodite or gonochoristic. Okay. So this is the regeneration process. You can cut the animal at any level on the body axis, and it will invariably regenerating the missing part. And you see here, it takes about 2 days to have the basal part regenerated. So this is the basal disc, this is the body column, this is the head regions with the tentacles. And there is a single opening that we call mouse, but it's as much a mouse as an anus, okay? And here, this is decapitation. And you see after 2 days, you have already tentacle rudiments. And after mid-gastric section, which most of the experiments we do like this, and you have, it's a bit delayed. Okay, something quite amazing also that was discovered in parallel in Japan and Germany is the fact that you can dissociate tissues, mix the cells, and they will spontaneously form a ball, and from this ball of cells, you will have an animal that regenerates. So here we took two different transgenic lines, green in the outer layer and red in the inner layer, and you see the sorting of the cells, which comes very fast, and you can follow the apical patterning from this mass. So it's a very interesting paradigm. It's much more difficult than regeneration, but still it's very interesting, very useful. Okay, so this is a short summary of what I told you. Very dynamic homeostasis we are going to see with the stem cells, budding, regeneration, reaggregation, and sexual development. Now, there are some Hydra strains that do age, and this is from the species Hydra oligactis. When you put them at 10 degrees, within 2 weeks, you see sexual differentiation. Here, it's a male strain, so plenty of testes here. You see the head of the animal that becomes miserable, and all these animals are going to die within 3 to 4 months. In parallel, we were happy to find actually a very closely related strain that goes also through gametogenesis, but traversed this difficult period and remains happy. We followed these animals for 1 year and they do not age. So aging does happen, and the animals I'm not going to go through because I don't have time today, but they lose their behaviors like prey captures, reaction to light, and more importantly, they lose regeneration very fast. So you see after 9 days at 10 degrees, the regeneration potential is only 50% and it's lost after 3 weeks and irreversible. And this is the survival curve of this strain, which is not aging, and this strain, which is aging. Okay, so how does it work at the cellular level? Two layers, a gastroderm and an epiderm. And you see that all the cells that are in yellow here are actually cycling, or most of them are cycling, and the blue regions are terminally differentiated. So you see very well that it's actually it's a centrifuge, this animal. It's full of stem cell in the central part, but the extremities are terminally differentiated. Of course, you cannot get any regeneration from a piece of tentacle. There is nobody cycling there. There are some cells cycling. It should be blue and yellow here because there are some cells cycling in the hypostome, the head region, but actually not so many. This is a closer view of these two layers, and you see these large digestive cells, which are myoepithelial. You have the myofibrils here at the base, and also the epidermal cells are also myoepithelial cells with myofibrils, which are oriented perpendicular, which means that the animal can spontaneously contract in all directions. And in between, you have these interstitial stem cells, which are multipotent, give rise to all the nervous system, cells of the nervous system, like typically these sensory motor sensory nerve cells, but also interneurons that we name ganglia cells, and all these stinging cells, which are mechanosensory cells that are, when you touch them, that release their venom, and also the gland cells. And interestingly, they also give the germ cells when the animal becomes sexual. So three stem cell populations, from the gastrodermis, myoepithelial, from the epidermis, myoepithelial, and these multipotent interstitial stem cells. These myoepithelial cells are multifunctional. So you see that you are at a stage of evolution where a single cell type does many functions, autophagy, phagocytosis, safrinol, differentiation. They are involved in the organizer I'm going to talk about, the organizer activity, of course, protection barrier, adhesion. They also secrete a very thick extracellular matrix that we name mesoglia that stick the two layers together. Okay, so the first thing we did to understand better the regeneration processes was to go through a very detailed transcriptomic analysis. This was done by Yvan Wenger over the past almost 10 years, I have to say. Spatial along the body axis, regeneration at multiple time points, cell types after FAC sorting because we have transgenic lines now, and also as we can kill the fast cycling cells, which are these interstitial stem cells, we can make epithelial animals, and we also monitor these changes in the epithelial cells. All these results are now available, publicly available on a server, which is named HydraClass. And you can go with any type of sequence you want. You do a blast, you find which sequence is the most closely related in the Hydra. I think there are 26 or 27,000 transcripts there. And you can see how they are expressed along the body axis of the animals at 5 different positions in the different stem cell populations. After the drug, so it means in epithelial animals, and this is the regenerating conditions. So this is just to go through. Wilms region is I'm going to talk a lot about, so I show you the pattern. This was the published pattern by the Holstein lab already 20 years ago. And you see that it fits very well. We have about 1,000 reads in the head and then 100 which is not detected by in situ actually, and 10 reads in the body column. So it's not graded, but it's predominantly expressed in the head. And another gene, DKK, which was also expressed, published by the Holstein lab, and that is not expressed in the head at all, but expressed as a graded distribution along the body column, and this fits. So these five positions were really good selection, I think, because we really see the special pattern. And this was three independent experiments performed at three different periods of the year. Okay, so this is just a closer view of the different signaling pathway. You see that Wnt agonists, there are 11 Wnt genes, mostly expressed in the apical region. FGF, you can have apical and basal. And you see that a lot of BMP regulators are in the basal part, and we think that BMP signaling plays a key role in the basal region. Concerning regeneration, what we did was we compared three different types of regeneration. First, cut the animal in two here, and then you can follow basal regeneration from the orange part, apical regeneration from the green part, but we also decapitated the animal, so we can compare these two types of regeneration, which is after decapitation. It's nine different time points, again, three different experiments along the year, so we have statistical values for each gene. Now, what you have to understand is this animal has a huge plasticity, which means that when the animal is intact, if you take this piece of tissue, well, it's a neutral environment, it's surrounded by stem cells, and it's equally distant from the basal region and the apical region, and it's quite stable. As soon as you cut, let's say here, this piece of tissue very rapidly knows that it has to make the missing upper part, whereas if you cut here, the same piece of tissue is going to make a basal region, and this fate determination at the phosphorylation level comes very, very fast, and I'm going to say that we have to tell you that we have now more information at the genetic level. Now, if you cut on each side, you are going to have regeneration on apical regeneration and basal regeneration. Okay, so this is a PCA analysis of the different conditions, just to show you that for the first 8-16 hours, all the dots here, which represent these three types of regeneration, are very similar, and then basal regeneration is here, foot regeneration, and apical regeneration is here, just to tell you that the intact value is here, so at 48 hours, regeneration is done, which is not the case for the head. This is the intact values, and you see that after decapitation and mid-gastric, there are still some way to go. Something that was quite interesting that we found was that actually, if we looked at patterns which are we name impulse, which means that they go up and down, we look at all these genes, we found about 150 different genes that do that, up and down within the first 16 hours. And the pattern is absolutely identical between head and foot regeneration, meaning that at that time, there is no specification and that these genes actually correspond to immune functions and are involved in wound closure. And there are some genes which are a bit longer, like this one, for example, which correspond to extracellular matrix remodeling. So all these genes, it's context independent, and we call that generic regulations. Typically, this is here 43 genes among these 150, which all belong to the innate immune system. And this was quite interesting to see that the innate immune system is activated quite similarly in both type of regenerating tips. And the reason, the role it plays in wound healing for sure, in bacterial or immune response for sure, but whether it has a developmental role is not clear yet. Now we have the second type of regulations that we name sustained. And you see, for example, naked cuticle-like is sustained during head regeneration, but not during foot regeneration. WEED3 is sustained during head regeneration, but not foot regeneration, and so on. So we can find many genes of interest. And we wanted to know when the tissue that I just showed you is naive in the middle part of the animal becomes instructed to make the missing structure. And what we did was to look at the fold change for each gene between time point 0 and 2, 4, 6, here it's 4 hours, so between 0 and 4 hours, and compare this fold change between basal regeneration and apical regeneration. So each dot here corresponds to a given gene that shows a significant fold change between 0 and 4 hours. And you see that the regression curve is positive, meaning that most regulations are very similar, if not identical, between these two types of regeneration. So this is a more detailed view. This is between 0 and 1 hour, 0 and 2 hours, 0 and 4. And you see the regression curve that suddenly, between 8 and 16 hours, is still vaguely positive and becomes, frankly, negative here and remains negative. So this means the analysis of the slopes of these regression lines means that there is a change in the tissue that was naive between 8 and 16 hours that becomes instructed. There is really a dramatic switch here. So this is the summary of this transcriptional analysis of regeneration. And I want now to, and this is just what I was saying before, this is all the red gene, which are, I mean, the proteins which are written red correspond to genes which are upregulated as an impulse between 0 and 16 hours. And we are sure that they are involved in the metabolic response and post-translational modifications that are required at that time. But what is their role? Do they play a role in this change from naive to instructed tissue? It's not clear at all. Now I switch to stem cell populations. So I told you 3 stem cell populations. These ones cycle much faster every day, and in these ones every 3-4 days. So what we did, we were lucky to have 3 transgenic lines that constitutively expressed GFP either in the myoepithelial cells from the epidermis, myoepithelial cells of the gastrodermis, or interstitial stem cells with the nanos promoter. And we did FACS sorting and RNA-seq on these different GFP-positive cells. And then for each gene, now we know that this is the body column intact, and this is now in the different stem cell populations. So you can really identify where the genes of interest are mostly expressed or exclusively expressed. This is useful because we completed that analysis by looking at animals where we give anti-mitotic drugs or anti-proliferative drugs like hydroxyurea, colchicine, and in some thermosensitive strains, heat shock. So we can kill this cell lineage while epithelial stem cells are not affected. So this, you transform your animals in epithelial animals, meaning that when they have their nervous system, of course, they catch the food. And after destruction of these stem cells, they become like big balloons. And if you want to keep them for long, you have to manually feed them. But you can keep them for several weeks without doing this manual feeding, which is extremely tedious. And the result is here, we looked at genes which are involved in neurogenesis, PAX genes, neuropeptides, MYC genes. We did MYC1 is involved in stem cell proliferation, self-renewal of these stem cells. And you see that after this treatment, it's gone. But the big surprise was to see that with different types of treatment, we have at least 700 genes which are upregulated, which means that you destroy the nervous system, you destroy the stem cells that give the nervous systems, and the epithelial cells are upregulating many genes. And among these many genes, we found genes which are involved in neurogenesis and neurotransmission. And this is something we still have to investigate, is what are the properties of these epithelial cells? They never become neurons. But they still, we don't use the word reprogramming, but they change. At least they change genetic programs they express. And I'm going to show you a short movie. So these animals still regenerate. So on the top, you have animals which are treated but not cut. So of course, the nervous system, it's there for several weeks because the animals change their nervous cells regularly, but it takes several weeks to change. And now you see an animal that was cut after heat shock or that was cut after hydroxyurea given before amputation. Very few neurons left. Still, these animals regenerate perfectly well. If you give the drugs after amputation, then the nervous system still regenerates because I think there is transdifferentiation of the nerve cells that remain in the body column. If you prevent completely cell proliferation, then it becomes a problem to regenerate. And if you look at these animals, I'm going to see if we can. So this is, on the left, this is wild-type animals, the way they move. It's a bit accelerated. And on the right, this is animals that have regenerated without any nervous system. And you still that they are slow, but they still move quite a lot, which means that with myoepithelial layers, which have changed their genetic program, they are able to still react to their environment and move a bit. So this could tell us that these super multifunctional cells, from which it's usually well accepted neuronal cells derived, long evolution, that maybe they go one step backwards and they reacquire some functions that they were playing. Like, for example, if you make a movie of a sponge overnight, you will see that the sponge moves, expands, and contracts. It's very slow. They are not going to catch anything fast. But there is some reaction sensing functions from these non-neuronal cells. Okay, so now what are the mechanisms that maintain robust developmental processes in adult organisms? There was a key discovery made because of, thanks to the Hydra model system, and this was the discovery of the induction, which is a key phenomena in embryology, and this was made by an American lady who was a PhD student of Thomas Morgan, and she showed that there is some induction activity from the Hydra head, and not only from the Hydra head. So what she did, this was published in 1909, she took a piece of the head, and she kept one tentacle as a marker. So this is the graph. So she take it from one animal and graph it on another animal. And you see this is the day of the graft, 2 days later, 4 days later, 8 days later. 10 graft out of 13 gave an ectopic axis. And she understood that it was a major discovery. She did that between hydra that were green and depigmented, so pigmented and depigmented. And here you see that she pigmented, she grafted a non-pigmented hydra on a pigmented one, and you see that this ectopic axis is green, meaning that the tissue she grafted recruited the cells, which is exactly the definition of an organizer. And this was a really a major discovery, unfortunately not recognized by her, but recognized, as you know, by Hans Spemann, who published this experiment 15 years later. He got the Nobel Prize. He had Hydra in the lab, and he had asked Hilda Mongold to reproduce his experiments, and he had even annotated the paper of Ethel Brown, but never cited her. Okay, so we reproduced that in the lab, and this is now between non-transgenic and transgenic strain. We take a piece of the head with a tentacle, you have it. This is 18 hours post-grafting. 48 hours post-grafting, you see the graft, which is rather brown, and you see the recruited cells. This is what we name a homeostatic organizer, which means that this activity is required to maintain the shape of the animal. Now, if you look at a regenerating guy, you cut the guy, and you take a regenerating tip just at different time points, and you graft it in a second hydra, and you look at whether 2 days later there is an ectopic axis. For the first 3-5 hours, nothing will happen, and then progressively, most of your grafts are going to lead to the development of an ectopic axis, an ectopic head, 100% within 10, 12 hours. And this we repeated in the lab also with transgenic, and here it was taken 16 hours after bisection, graft on a host, which is transgenic, and again you see that there is recruitment of the cells and growth of an ectopic, full ectopic body axis. So we have two types of organizer, homeostatic conditions and developmental conditions. And this means that the digestive tissue, which was located in the middle of the body axis, now is recruited and has a kind of developmental properties a few hours after amputation. So this is what is represented here. You start with an animal that has two organizer, because there is also one on the basal type. And when you cut, very rapidly, you regenerate these organizers. Okay, there were multiple transplantation experiments performed in the 20th century, and they showed that there are two main activities in this organizer, one which is positive, activating, inducing, and one which is negative. How do we know there is a negative? If you decapitate a hydra which is budding, the regeneration process will be dramatically slowed down because the head is producing inhibitory substances. And another type of experiment is that if you do the typical Brown experiment, you take a piece of the head, if you graft it close to the first head, it will be very difficult to have a second axis. But the further you go, the easier it is to induce an ectopic axis. So there is a graded distribution of an inhibitory activity. All these works was taken by physicist Alfred Kierer, and together with Hans Meinhardt, they worked on the Turing model, reaction diffusion model from Turing, and they proposed that there was a non-linear autoactivation. Green is the head activation that self-activate, and that there is, together with this activation, an inhibition which is under the control of the activation. So this is driven by the head activation, and then the head inhibition prevents sect activation. So this is a feedback loop. For those who are interested in the Volpert model doesn't work because it's a linear one, and linear model cannot become stable. So there, at that time, when they proposed that model in 72, everything was supposed to be on released substances, and they were claiming that the head activation was a short-range release substance, while the head inhibition was much more highly diffusible, a smaller molecule, and which was highly diffusible. So this is what you get if you cut an animal in the tip. If you measure the head activation component, it's immediately going up, while the head inhibition goes down. So for a period of time, head activation is alone to work, drives head regeneration, while the inhibition is transiently absent. This is not a model. This is results from grafting experiments. Okay, head activation. We know now we have quite a number of evidences accumulated for the past 20 years that head activation relies on Wnt beta-catenin signaling. This is the Wnt3 pattern I showed already, and I'm not going to go through that. But there are many evidences: beta-catenin localization in the head, beta-catenin activation. This is, if you treat the animals with alsteprolone, which is a GSK3 beta inhibitor, so you constitutively activate Wnt beta-catenin, you see animals that make multiple axis, multiple head. And this is just in these conditions, you see this is the TCF pattern in normal conditions. And when you treat these animals with this alsteprolone, you see TCF upregulated everywhere. And then you see these spots of Wnt3 and these multiple tentacles that grow. So there are very good evidences that Wnt signaling is, the canonical Wnt beta-catenin signaling is responsible for the hydra activator. So Matthias Fock, when he joined the lab, wanted to identify the head inhibitor, and he worked with a student, Laura Iglesias, together to identify this inhibitor. What they did was to fix the criteria. And the criteria should be that this head inhibitor has to be activated by Wnt beta-catenin signaling, according to the model here. It has to inhibit Wnt beta-catenin signaling. It has to prevent head formation, to be upregulated at some point during head regeneration and not foot basal regeneration. And it should be predominantly expressed in the apical region. So these criteria, he was helped because he had done his PhD on planarians, and he used results that were just published in planarians, the result of a RNAi screen, a beta-catenin RNAi screen that identifies something like 400 putative target genes of beta-catenin. So he took these 400 genes, looked at which of them were expressed in hydra and which of them were expressed predominantly in the at the apical, and then were re-expressed during regeneration. So 440, then there were 124, which are real autologs in Hydra. Then he found five out of these 124 genes with a graded expression, and three upregulated during regeneration. And among these three, there was WNT3, WNT5, but the third one was very interesting. It was SP5. And SP5 is a transcription factor that has been identified as a WNT3 target genes in zebrafish and in several mammalian species. So this is, I showed you already before, the spatial expression pattern of WNT3. This is the spatial expression pattern of SP5, which is predominantly expressed in the head. And this is the fast upregulation of WNT3. And there is an upregulation of SP5, but which is delayed, which comes between 8 and 16 hours. This is the validation of the different hypotheses when we treat with alsterpolone. Also, we wanted to check that indeed the Hydra SP5 promoter is activated by Wnt beta catenin signaling, and this we did it in mammalian cells. So if you overexpress WNT3 or you overexpress receptor WNT receptor or make beta catenin constitutive, you always see an upregulation of the Hydra SP5 promoter with this reporter construct. And then what he did was to silence SP5 in Hydra. So what we do is to electroporate siRNAs repeatedly. And the result was quite amazing, which is that these animals grow multiple heads, you see, not in the original head, but along the body axis. Not in the original head because we think that the silencing is not strong enough. And the level of SP5 is very strong in the head. And this was amazingly, I mean, it's 100% of the animals that develop this phenotype. Each ectopic head do express WNT3, which is expected. And if you do that during regeneration, so electroporation, and then you cut the animal, all the animals regenerate multiple heads, as you can see here. This is the control condition with a single head. And these heads have a nervous system, which is expected. And these animals perfectly behave. These heads are perfectly functional. I show you. So on the left, it's a control animal. And on the right, it's one of these multi-headed animals. They receive their food. These are artemia they receive. And you see with their stinging cells, they catch immediately, they immobilize immediately the artemia, which are swimming, and they are going to eat like hell now. Okay? So it works very well. This to check that they digest, because here they fix on the tentacles, and then we want to digest. We use the eyes of the artemia, and you see the eyes of the artemias, which are in their belly. So we are sure that they have digested. It works. Okay, so of course we wanted to verify that this phenotype relies on Wnt beta catenin signaling and should lead to an upregulation of Wnt beta catenin signaling. And this is what you see here. It's a WNT3 in situ hybridization after scramble siRNA, SP5 siRNA. And you see that there is an upregulation. And you have a spot here that very likely is going to give one of these multiple head. This is quite transient because, of course, this is a very dynamic feedback loop. And if this is visible after 4 days, this is quantified after 4 days. But if you look 2 days later, it's gone. So it's very, very transient. Also, if we do beta-catenin RNAi, this is what we get with beta-catenin RNAi. And if we combine beta-catenin SP5, these animals, they have a bump, but they never make a full head. So they need beta-catenin signaling to make these ectopic heads, ectopic axes. And this is another experiment where we give alsterpolone. I told you, so we gave it at lower dose. It gives some ectopic tentacles, but if you have SP5 RNAi, plus alsterpolone, you have met now multiple ectopic tentacles. So this corresponds to another expression experiment. In all cases, we have obviously SP5 working through beta-catenin signaling. Final experiment is to use this reaggregation experiment. So here, RNAi, RNAi, to electroporation and alsterpolone. Then we do the dissociation reaggregation experiments, and we look 4 days later. This is what you get when you give alsterpolone multiple tentacles everywhere. This is what you get when you have alsterpolone plus SP5 siRNA. And you do an in situ and count the number of WNT3 spots that corresponds to ectopic heads, then you have a doubling of this ectopic spot. So again, it means that apical patterning is upregulating when SP5 is down. With the help of Leo Beccari, we checked that a repressor element that had been identified in the lab of Thomas Holstein, a repressor in the WIN3 promoter, is indeed targeted by SP5. So this was done in mammalian cells again. And what we could see is that indeed, when we take this construct that contains the repressor, there is a downregulation each time we express the full length SP5. If we remove the DNA binding domain, this downregulation doesn't occur. And if we remove this repressor element, there is no downregulation anymore. And Leo Beccari, I'm not going to show the data, help us to identify the target sequence in mammalian cells, the sequences, the genomic sequences that are targeted by Hydra SP5 and also zebrafish SP5, actually. In zebrafish, we wanted to verify whether this negative feedback loop on WIN signaling also occurs. This was done in the lab of Sophie Vries, and they injected a lot of larvae with embryos with the Hydra SP5, different version, complete full-length version. This version lacks the DNA binding domain, this one too. When they lack the DNA binding domain, we don't see any phenotype. Animals are perfectly normal. But if there is a DNA binding domain, we see animals that are that have no eyes, a curly axis. And if we combine this Hydra SP5 together with WNT8, these animals are most of them are dramatically modified. So this means that here there is an impact on WNT beta catenin signaling. It's not exactly the ones we were expecting, but this is an overexpression experiment. So I mean, it's always difficult to conclude from this type of experiment. But for sure, Hydra SP5 in zebrafish larvae is hitting the WNT pathway. So this is a summary of what I told you. In normal conditions, this is the loop as we see it. WNT beta catenin that is upregulated, self auto-activating, but at the same time activating SP5. I didn't have time, but we have some evidence that SP5 is also able to auto-activate its own expression. For sure, SP5 repress WIN3 and beta-catenin signaling. This is in conditions where SP5 is lowered by RNAi. We have, in intact animals, multiple heads that form along the body axis. During regeneration, we have multi-headed animals that regenerate. During reaggregation, we have multiple spots of WIN3 and multiple heads. And this is because you have a massive amplification of this WIN3 beta-catenin pathway because SP5 is at least transiently not active. Now, I told you that in the GIR model, the inhibitor was supposed to be a diffusible molecule. Of course, here, I know that transcription factors can be considered as diffusible molecules. Certainly, yes, they are. Some of them. So we have not demonstrated that SP5 is a diffusible molecule. Now it can also direct the expression of diffusible molecules, and this is what we are looking at now. And we are mostly interested to dissect these mechanisms in these two different conditions, which is homeostatic and regeneration organizer, how much different they are. Just keep in mind that the homeostatic organizer is surrounded by highly differentiated cells, mostly, whereas the developmental organizer in the middle part of the body column is surrounded by stem cells. So cellular context is completely different. Final slide to try to answer the questions that was asked for this meeting, development versus regeneration. This is the way I see regeneration in Hydra. I told you that stem cells in aging animals are highly deficient, and this is, I didn't tell you enough time, but autophagy flux is really highly deficient in these aging animals. So here the triangles represent four conditions that are requested. So it's a pre-injury homeostatic requirement to have an efficient regeneration. If this doesn't exist, cellular plasticity, patterning of the extracellular matrix, dynamic adult stem cells and autophagy flux, there is no regeneration. The regeneration program is here, blastema organizer patterning, This is the 3D morphogenetic processes. To me, I think this, if we compare budding regeneration, this is very similar. And in between, you have metabolic responses. We know that FROS signaling is important. A cellular response where we know that cell death plays a key role. We have chromatin changes. We just start to investigate this. It's not well investigated in the Hydra model system. We know that all these signalings play a role, and regulation of cell cycling, cell cycle re-entry is playing a role, because if it stopped, there is no regeneration. So to me, regeneration development might be very similar here, and all the rest is really adult-specific and regeneration-specific. I stop here. Thank you very much for your attention. I just want to thank the people. Of course, these are the people in yellow names correspond to people who just left the lab. And I mentioned the work of Matthias, who was really instrumental to develop this head inhibitor project, SP5 project. And I want to thank Sophie, because it was a very nice collaboration. I hope we can continue. Thank you very much.